Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shri Shuka Uvacha Evam Uktva Sadevarshir Kato Narayana Shramam Nalakuvara Manigrivav Asatur Yamararjunao Shri Shuka Uvacha Evam Uktva Sadeva Shir Kato Narayana Shramam Nalakuvara Manigrivav Asatur Yamalarjunao Shri Shuka Uvacha. Evam Uktva Sadevarshir. Kato Narayana Shramam. Nalakuvara Manigrivav. Asatur. Asatur Yamalarjunao Shri Shuka Uvacha. Shri Shukadeva Goswami continued to speak. Evam Uktva, thus uttering. Saha he, Deva Rishi, the greatest saintly person. Narada Gataha left that place. Narayana Ashrama for his own ashrama. Known as Narayana Ashrama. Nalakuvara. Manigrivao and Manigriva. Asatuhu remained there to become. Yamala Arjunao, twin Arjuna trees. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sugadeva Goswami continued. Having thus spoken, the great saint Devarshi Narada returned to his ashrama known as Narayana Ashrama. And Nalakuvara and Manigriva became twin Arjuna trees. Purport. Arjuna trees are still found in many forests, and their skin is used by cardiologists to prepare medicine for heart trouble. This means that even though they are trees, they are disturbed when skinned for medical science. That's the purport. Narada cursed. I came, I cursed, and I left. He cursed and he went home. He didn't have much business in Swargaloka with these two materialistic sons of a demigod. He didn't have much business with them. He doesn't have much business with any of us in the material world. Business means someone wants to make a profit. We're all exploiting one another to get some advantage, and that's our interaction in material life. Even the name of love and family, that's all we're doing, is using one another for our selfish purposes. But great saints aren't involved in that business. If they are, they're not great saints. They're frauds. A real saint is not involved in material exploitation, either as victim or as victimizer. That's the sign of a real saint. He's not an exploiter or exploited. So therefore, a sage like Narada doesn't have much interaction on the material level. He comes, he does some service for the benefit of mankind, and goes back and sits in his ashram and avoids entanglement. Still, such sages can be very influential in human society just by being sages. Look at these two persons, Narada and his disciple Vyasadeva. They don't have any material business other than just being sages. Vyasadeva is a literary sage. He contributes books. He trains up his disciples to teach those books. But that's it. That's his involvement in human society. He was staying in a very secluded place, away from everything, and just doing his writing and training his disciples. He happened to have the Pandavas, who were actually his children, his grandchildren. And he had a special attachment to them, and they had a special role in Krishna's pastimes. So he did get involved. The exception is that he got involved for the sake of the Pandavas. He even gave birth to Vidura, Dhritarashtra, and Pandu. He became their father, surrogate father. That much involvement he had. And he came down from his ashram once in a while, came to Hastinapur or to Indraprastha to help the Pandavas and participate in Krishna's pastimes. But otherwise, he stayed up in his ashram and avoided ordinary material intercourse and ordinary material dealings. Still, just by writing those books and teaching a few disciples, he changed the course of human civilization. Statement is there in the Padma Purana that if the sun and the moon somehow became extinguished, somehow life might go on in this universe. But if Vyasadeva was never present, then the world would be in complete darkness. So we depend so much on the contribution of Vyasadeva. There was until recently, some sort of human civilization in India before the introduction of MTV. There still was some civilization here because of the contribution of Vyasadeva and his disciples. There is some other culture beside Michael Jackson and Mickey Mouse in India, because the Mahabharata is there, and other books from which this culture is derived. These standards of human behavior were taught. That's me. Sorry. Were taught by Vyasadeva and his disciples. Sorry. Okay, maybe Gopal better. And they didn't have to get involved. They didn't have to act as exploiters or exploited. They could avoid that entanglement and avoid all other dealings other than just being sages. Of course, that's not for everybody. Many brahmanas have to be more involved than that. They have other duties, and they feel obligated to take care of their families, maybe even to participate in the running of the government, to be advisors to the government, or to accept customers as a in the role of priest and pick up people's karma that way, along with their money. Brahmanas may sometimes have to be more involved, but the ideal is this, that there's no material involvement, that their only business is patana, patana, yajana, yajana, dana, patikraha. Studying and teaching, worshipping for themselves and for others, and not for money, not as a business. And accepting charity and giving charity. Brahman is allowed to accept charity. That's not improper or irreligious for him. A kshatriya should never accept charity. He'd rather starve. He should rather starve than take charity from anybody. Of course, emergencies may be there. We have the story of Harish Chandra, who was expelled, actually just being tested by sage Vishwamitra, I think. He was expelled from his kingdom. And he and his family were wandering. And he tried to get employment, but he couldn't find any. So he had to accept food in Benares. He accepted a free meal at a temple. He had to do that. He had to degrade it. But that was degrading for a kshatriya. And he was degraded even further. He became a chandala, the servant of a chandala, working in the cemetery, in the funeral ghat. You know, but that was very degrading. That was his test. Beginning with having to accept a free meal is the first degradation for a kshatriya. But a brahmana, no problem. He can have three free meals a day. He can wander from one bandar to the next, and that's okay for him. It's actually his duty to let people fill his belly. But it's one of his duties, not the prime duty. Yeah, it's number six. So there are different levels, there are different, you know, there are different styles of being a brahmana, but the pure ideal is not to be involved at all in anything material. Just to teach the truth and stay away from the mode of exploitation. As soon as we're involved in material civilization, as consumers and producers, then we're living in this mode of exploitation. Even modern medicine should just be for saving lives and keeping health. But modern Western medicine is also exploitative. The way it's practiced, the mode of treatment is violent and exploitative. And it does violence to the patients. They suffer more bad than good at the hands of their doctors. And the doctors become greedy and corrupt because of the system. And the methods of medicine are mostly violent and intrusive, disrupting the natural functioning of the body, cutting out pieces that shouldn't be cut out, and various other kinds of intrusion and disruption. So even the activity that should be in the mode of goodness becomes also corrupt when it's allowed to become materialistic. Brahmanas, it's their duty not to become materialistic. A Vaishya, a Shudra, is expected to be selfish and take whatever material facility he can get. A Vaishya's duty is to collect as much money as he can. And his privilege is to live nicely with the money he's earned. It's his money. But that's for a Vaishya. Or worse than that, a Shudra, who can indulge in sense gratification without any qualms. But that's selfish life. That's low-class life. A Kshatriya or a Brahmana has to be selfless and self-controlled and not take more than he needs. What he needs. A Kshatriya needs a kingdom. So he can fight for a kingdom. But not for selfish, not to fill up a bank account in Switzerland. So then when he gets kicked out of office, he has something to live on. You know. No. He lives only for the service of the citizens and is ready to die on their behalf. Not to run away, you know, to some neutral country when the people don't like him anymore. But he should serve the people so they don't kick him out. And he should be ready to sacrifice his life in their service. Then he can take their taxes and live nicely. And he shouldn't have to be greedy for money. He should have no thought of it. Yeah. The treasury will be filled by the grateful citizens. They won't avoid paying taxes if the government properly takes care of them. When the government is composed of exploiters and cheaters, then the people don't want to pay their taxes, and they don't. They avoid. They don't serve the government freely and happily. So Kshatriya has his duty and responsibilities, and he has to be noble. He has to give before he takes. He has to protect the citizens, and then he can take their taxes. He has to maintain the principles of religion by maintaining law and order, by seeing that criminals and invaders are punished and stopped. If he doesn't use the rod of punishment, if he, in the name of nonviolence, fails to punish the wrongdoers and stop them, then he's sinful. And he will get not one-sixth of the pious credits, but one-sixth of all the sins of his citizens and go to hell just by being nonviolent in the name of religion. But a brahmana has to be nonviolent. That's one of his prime duties. He has to accomplish maintaining the principles of religion without using force. He has to use conviction, convince people rather, by the words coming out of his mouth. The power of a Brahmin is what he says. It's believed. It's followed. Because the Brahmin is trusted. His word is trusted. Kshatriya, his arm is trusted. But a Brahmin, his words are trusted. And people put their faith in it and are willing to live their lives according to the instructions of the Brahmanas because they trust them. That is the power of the Brahman, is that his word is believed. And then when he curses somebody, it will come true. There's no possibility that Narada's curse will be ineffective. There's nothing that Nalakuvara and Manigriva can do now but accept their fate and become trees. And they, at least they were enough civilized that they didn't rebel against the curse. They accepted it on their heads. They bowed down to Narada and accepted the curse and lived it out. And in the end, they'll meet Krishna and be saved. So Narada is not being negligent by walking away from this situation and going back to his ashram. He's done his duty. He's said a few things which will change the life of these two gentlemen and ultimately save them. All he did was speak a few words. They're recorded in the verses we read. He didn't lay a hand on them. He didn't arrest them, with a gun and he didn't call the police. He didn't do anything but say a few words. But those words were important. There's different uses of language. One of the most potent forms of the use of language is that which actually changes the reality. I'd say it's magical potency of language. We see it in normal life, in the judicial system. The judge has the power to proclaim, I sentence you to be hung by the neck until you're dead. May God have mercy on your soul. Because no one else is going to have any mercy. You've been sentenced to die. You better deal with God now. Or I declare you man and wife, or I award the plaintiff $1 million in damages. So the judge is creating reality just by saying something. That's one special use of language. We find it in the Vedas, in the Atharva Veda. Not the Atharva Veda, I'm sorry, Yajur Veda. The Advayu or Yajur Veda priest chants a particular kind of mantra. It doesn't have meter like the Rig Veda mantras. Yajur Veda mantras are a prose without meter. They're chanted, there's intonation, but it's different than the Rig Veda intonation. And it's not metrical, it's prose. But that language, the language of the Yajurveda, is magical language. The Yajurveda priest, like the judge in the court, is creating reality by what he says, by the mantras he chants. Oh, he talks to a clay pot. Ordinary potter made this pot. Actually, one kind of pot that's used in the Soma Yoga has to have breasts on it, two breasts. And he dressed the pot. Oh, in I don't know the Sanskrit, but in the Yajurveda language. Oh, you are the womb of Aditi. You are the womb of the earth. He's talking to a pot. But he actually transforms that clay pot into the womb of Aditi, which is the womb of the whole universe. Of course, she's the mother of the demigods and other creatures. She and her sisters are the mothers of everybody. But clay pot is a dirty thing. It's made by a Shudra. Now, it's been touched by a Shudra. It's contaminated. So before using it in a sacrifice, you have to sprinkle it with water and chant the appropriate mantras to transform it into something elevated, something on the level of sacrificial performance. You can change the ordinary clay pot into the womb of Aditi by the proper chanting of that Yajurveda mantra. Or in the beginning of the most basic sacrifice, the Pravargya, which is performed, it's the same as the Agnihotra sacrifice, that every Brahmana who has the sacred fire installed in his house is obliged to perform twice a day at sunrise and sunset. Oblation of warm milk. Now you need to milk the cow to get the milk to offer. And in order to milk the cow, you have to make sure the calf doesn't drink all the milk. So the first step in the Pravargya ritual and the first mantra in the Yajurveda is Om Ishe Twa, Urje Twa. These are the first words of the Yajurveda. Oh, it's talking to the stick. Palashas, I think palasha wood that you take off of a tree. Take a stick, and you have to. Then the Yajurveda priest has to chant this mantra. Oh, you are for, you are for food, you are for power. That means, I'll stick, I'm going to use you to chase away the calf, so the mother has some milk left, and we're going to take that milk and offer it to Indra. And Indra will become fed and powerful by that, and he'll bless us. That's the performance that's going to be done. But you have to, first of all, take an ordinary stick and turn it into a magical stick that can be engaged in the sacrifice. That's the use of language to transform reality. That's there in the Vedas. That's there in the curse of a pure Brahman. The reality is you're blessed or you're cursed by the word of the Brahman. We should be harvesting blessings, not curses. We should go to the pure Brahmans and get their blessings. My boy, I'm very pleased with your attempt to serve. I hope that my spiritual master and the Supreme Lord are very pleased with you. You get that blessing, then your life is successful. And you can go around trying to collect as many such blessings as possible. That changes your life. When the Brahman thinks and speaks such words, that changes everything. When the pure Brahman does. Okay, so I'll stop. Are there any questions or comments? Yes,
So Vyasadeva was his powers of reaching his hand was very powerful.
Yes.
In Narada Muni also. So Brahmana, he convinces with his words. How does one develop this power of speech?
Practice. Study. You want to get the power, the blessings of Saraswati, of Vagdevi, the goddess of speech. You have to serve her. So studying the language and working very hard to become a master at use of a language and the service of language is one way to get her blessings. go to school and study, then you'll get the blessings of Saraswati. You know, we're trying to learn these language skills in order to be able to use them in service. You know, we're the business of brahmanas, when they're functioning like brahmanas, is to use language in the service of the Supreme Lord's mission. So we should serve the language and become not masters of the language, but servants of the language, and become empowered to speak on behalf of the Supreme by service and study. Okay, yeah. That's our program, is to become empowered by the goddess of speech, that we can speak potently and effectively and truthfully. Okay.
Where's an orange tree?
Oh, I don't know. I think the Latin term is Arjuna something. One thing I heard is that the roots are very hard, and an Arjun tree is extremely difficult to dig out of the ground because of the hard roots. So uprooting, pulling out an Arjun tree is a practically impossible feat. Pulling out two of them, you know, two of them means maybe their roots are entangled, you know, and then, if, you know, for anybody, for five men to do that is tough.
Bigger tree, and this fruit is
just
like small fruits.
Yes.
But it cannot be eaten.
It's not eatable.
So dry fruits.
But
very strong.
Bark is used in medicine for respiratory diseases too. I take it.
Yeah, there is skin we put in water, yeah, and drink in morning
time
for skin disease.
Skin disease, okay. Heart disease, skin disease, and breathing also. Arjun is used. It's in the Vajradanti toothpaste too. Yes.
Yesterday in the report it was said that trees are not conscious.
And here they're suffering because even though, as Prabhupada said, even though they're trees, they were made special trees. They not, you know, not to lose their consciousness. Prabhupada was talking about Arjun trees, that it bothers them when they get skinned in general. Yes, is
trees also feel
they have pain. They have rudimentary sensation of pain, very very basic. You can say it depends on how you look at it. You can say they don't feel pain. They don't feel pain the way we do, but there's some sensation there. So Prabhupada seems to be contradicting himself, but it means that they don't. You know, the kind of pain they feel is not the kind of pain we do. How can someone tolerate standing in one place for hundreds of years? If he felt the pain the way we did, we can't stand it for 10 minutes. You know, so therefore, the pain they're experiencing is very dull, very very you know, weak sensation of pain. Otherwise, they couldn't tolerate their condition. They're anesthetized.
That's why they're unconscious.
Yeah. A man under anesthetic, if you stick him with a pin, there'll be a reaction. You'll see the arm, you know, retract. I think if he's, no, it's not like you can stick a person who's anesthetized with all sorts of pins and things, and there's no reaction at all. Some reaction is there. Okay. I guess we'll stop here. Thank you all. Glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.